So now I'm really excited. It's one of those favorite times of the board meeting where we get to hear a Carolina story. And Lowry Caudill has quite a Carolina story, and I'm excited to welcome him to the podium to share his.
Dana, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share my Carolina story. I grew up in Shelby, which is about an hour west of Charlotte, and I had an incredible chemistry teacher in high school. He was a two-time Carolina grad, and he got me excited about chemistry, and even as a high schooler, I could envision a career in chemistry. I asked him where the best university in North Carolina was to study chemistry. He said UNC Chapel Hill. That's why I came to Carolina. I entered in 1975. I got a BS degree in chemistry, graduated in 79. I did my undergraduate research with Professor Royce Murray, an analytical chemist, and he encouraged me to go on to graduate school. I went to Indiana University in Bloomington, and my PhD advisor was Mark Whiteman. Well, Mark had gotten his PhD with Murray several years before, so even my graduate school experience was heavily influenced by Carolina. Now, Mark came back to Carolina in 1989, and he's just recently retired as a Keenan Professor of Chemistry. After graduate school, I decided I wanted to go in the pharmaceutical industry. The notion of applying science to help people live healthier, better lives just resonated with me, and it resonates today. My first job was with Baxter Travitol in Chicago. I met an executive there, a fellow by the name of Dennis Casey. Dennis eventually left Baxter and came to a quote-unquote startup in RTP called Glaxo. And in the early 80s, very few people knew anything about Glaxo. Glaxo is the oldest British pharmaceutical company, but had never participated in the US market. They chose the Research Triangle Park because of the high concentration of scientists, quality of life, the access to universities, and highly educated workforce, and easy to recruit. It was an easy area to recruit, particularly from folks from the Northeast. Dennis, after he'd been here a few months, gave me a call and said, I have an opportunity I think would work well with you. Would you talk to me about it? So I came back to North Carolina and interviewed with him. Wow, what an opportunity. Glaxo had the number one selling drug in the world, Zantac, at the time. It was the first $1 billion pharmaceutical product. The pipeline was the best in the industry. It had Zofran, Imitrex, Cerevent, Flonase, all multi-billion dollar compounds. We had to build facilities from scratch out in Research Triangle Park. We had to hire staff, put in systems, compliance, and working on all dosage forms. It was just an opportunity that I couldn't pass on. The fact that it was in North Carolina was great. So I came to Glaxo. A few months after being at Glaxo, Dennis called me in his office and said, we've got an interesting situation. Our colleagues in the UK want to develop the registration packages for these new compounds. They'll do it for the rest of the world. We have to do it for the US market. We don't have the capacity to do all the work. We're gonna have to look external to Glaxo. We're gonna see if we can outsource it. Well, in those days, none of the major pharmaceutical companies outsourced pharmaceutical development. Pharmaceutical development is the dosage form development, the drug substance development, and all the analytical testing around that. And Dennis said, we've gotta figure it out, and I'd like you to lead this effort. We made it work. We found some companies that could help us. We pumped a lot of money into those companies. We helped them grow. And along the way, another scientist and I started talking and said, well, why aren't we helping these companies? Why don't we build a company and do the same thing? And that led to the creation of a company called Magellan Laboratories. Al Childers and I created Magellan in 1991, the two of us. Our vision was to build a pharmaceutical development organization in the image of a major pharmaceutical company with the same talent, same know-how, same gray matter, and be able to provide that back to the pharmaceutical companies to help them develop their drugs. And so we started with the two of us. So over the next decade, we grew to over 600 people, 80% were scientists, 25% were PhDs. We had over 500 in RTP. We had over 100 in La Jolla, California. There are only four places in the country we could have built the company that was a science-based company like this and grow it at the rate at which we did. RTP was the best place because cost of living and just what I think quality of life, it was easy to do, relatively speaking, in RTP. San Francisco, Boston, and San Diego were the others that we could have built the company. We sold the company in 2002 to Cardinal Health. Cardinal Health is known for drug distribution and hospital supplies and whatnot, but at the time, they were the largest contract manufacturer in the world. And overnight, when they bought us, we became the largest contract development and manufacturing organization in the world. Al and I stayed 2 years with Cardinal Health. We're entrepreneurs. It was time to move on onto the next endeavor. In 2002, Professors Murray and Whiteman showed up at my office in RTP, and they asked me if I would be willing to chair the fundraising for the Carolina Physical Sciences Complex. And the state of North Carolina in the late 1990s had a bond referendum for $3 billion the citizens approved, and it was to build buildings on UNC system campuses. We were woefully behind in basic sciences at Chapel Hill. We hadn't built a new science building in over 40 years. It's hard to do world-class research if you don't have world-class facilities. And so we were in the process of building five new buildings, three chemistry buildings, a math physics building, and a computer sciences building. $90 million came from the bond referendum. The single largest chunk of the bond referendum went to the complex. $90 million came from federal overhead receipts for federal grants, and $25 million had to be raised privately. And so I was asked to be the external person to lead the fundraising for the $25 million. The faculty rep for this was a young chemist named Holden Thorpe. And so Holden and I traipsed all over the country raising money and eventually raised this money. And he and I became really, really good friends. Holden moved on and became chemistry department chair. And he introduced me to a program at Carolina called the Minor in Entrepreneurship. And the minor is now called the Shuford Program in Entrepreneurship. But at the time it was in its infancy, being funded by the Kauffman Foundation, just launching and so forth. They needed a science ventures class created. So Holden and I created the class. We taught it together for a year. Holden became dean, no longer could teach. And I taught it for 7 years with Jody Simone. And then I taught it for 4 years with Greg Copenhaver, who's a biologist and entrepreneur. He's also our senior associate dean for innovation and research in the college today. I don't teach that class today, but I guest lecture six lectures a spring, each spring for Greg, who's continued to teach the class. I also co-taught the minor, the introduction to entrepreneurship class in the minor, and Meg Lyons, who's on our board, was one of my students a few years ago, and absolutely incredible student. Holden became chancellor. His first initiative and only initiative as chancellor was he wanted to create a strategy for innovation and entrepreneurship in Carolina. How to take our best ideas and innovations, move them out to the world, make the world a better place was the notion. He asked me to chair a group called the Innovation Circle, which was about 50 innovators and entrepreneurs to help the university devise this plan, to work with students and faculty and the administration to create the plan. He gave us a year to do it. Wanted to launch it at University Day 2010, and we created the strategy. We called it the Innovation Roadmap. The Innovation Roadmap is what the university has followed for the last decade. And we are now recognized as one of the top entrepreneurial universities in the world. And this was largely due to Holden's vision. Now, Carol Folt, when she came on board, embraced it. In fact, Carol says one of the reasons she came to Carolina was because of the work we were doing in this space. Carol embraced it, and Kevin Guskowitz, our current chancellor, has embraced it as well. And we really haven't looked back, and it's incredible what we can do as a university in this space. I was asked to join the Board of Trustees in 2011, primarily to help implement the Innovation Roadmap. Holden left the university in 2013. I became chair of the Board of Trustees in 2013. And we had a number of goals for the year. One was helping Carol with her onboarding in Carolina, but another was to advance the innovation and entrepreneurial activities on campus and to make sure we didn't drop the ball. Our board did not want us to drop the ball between chancellor transition. Carol picked it up very quickly and off and running. I spent two terms on the trustees and ended in 2019. My two highlights on the board, I had the privilege of chairing the search committee for Bubba Cunningham, and Stick was one of the members of the committee. Wasn't that a fun time? It was an incredible time. We had the best of the best in the country to choose from. And ultimately Holden chose, we gave him candidates, but ultimately he chose Bubba, and Bubba's done an absolutely wonderful job. I also had the privilege of chairing the search committee for our vice chancellor for development, David Ruth, and did that roughly about the same time as well. And David has done a superb job. I'm a co-chair of the capital campaign, our $4.25 billion capital campaign. And David and his team have designed the campaign. We're about to blow through the $4.25 billion, and we have until the end of 2022 to complete the campaign. Who knows what the number is going to be north of $4.25 billion, but it's absolutely amazing. We're as good as any of the privates now, and we are the best of the best in the public space in terms of fundraising, which is absolutely amazing. In parallel to all of this, I've been on the Rams Club board for a number of years. I chaired the Rams Club board from 2015 to 17. While I was chair, we initiated and the construction of the new soccer lacrosse stadium, the indoor football practice facility, the field hockey stadium, and the track and field facilities. And then the highlight while I was on the Rams Club board as chair was I had absolutely nothing to do with this, but we won the championship in basketball, in men's basketball. That was pure fun. I've saved the most important part down to the end. I met my wife here in 1978. Our three children are Carolina grads. Our youngest is in her second year of the MBA program at Keenan Flagler. And then in hindsight, in looking back on this, it was a privilege to be educated here. Carolina prepared me incredibly well for a career in the pharmaceutical industry, beyond anything I could have imagined. Doug, you knew I was going to do this, get choked up on this. And then I will always be grateful. To the folks that created the Research Triangle Park. Carolina was a large part of that. And I got a chance to meet Bill Little and know Bill Little before he passed away. Bill was the Carolina rep that helped create the park. He brought the first company into the park. To be able to have your career in a place you love and to grow a business in a place you love was only possible because of these folks and what they built, and being able to do that on their shoulders. The last 20 years or so for me has been a real honor to serve Carolina in a number of different ways. And hopefully what I've been able to do along with all of you and many, many, many others is help pave the way for the next generation and generation after that of Carolina students who can go on and lead our state and our nation and the world. Thank you for the opportunity to talk today.